Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Colin,
and Jay Noon. In a nutshell, Anarchapulco is essentially Pork Fest without the riffraff.
Oh.
So
I was there. What are you talking about?
You're not a riffraff, Colin.
He is the Pork Fest riffraff.
I don't think so. the thing with Colin is people don't, you know, he likes to point out the riffraff and he expose them, and then they cry and go get a little nutty and get all upset. But generally the people he's pointing out are the ones who are really, you know, who've been getting their dopamine hits from creating drama online anyways. But anyways, back to Anarchapulco. So an interesting thing about Anarchapulco was at this place called the Secret Garden, which is like, I don't know, probably the area that we were in, I would say it's like a 6 or 7 acre campus. They had a bunch of like beautiful stonework there. It was pretty, you know, tore up by the hurricane. But they do a lot of like all kinds of it's like a healing place. It's like sort of the Secret Garden's like when you first walk in. You know, the Reiki symbol, like all the people that are into Reiki have that Reiki tattoo. My wife even has a tattoo on her back. I don't even know what it's called, but like that's like when you first walk into the place, there's that symbol. Maybe somebody call in and
I don't know, is it Om or something?
Right, yes.
Oh, it is?
I believe that's what it is, yeah. So, and then you walk around there and there's all kinds of like, it's basically like a healing place. It's owned by a doctor who I believe he's a holistic doctor, Dr. Carlos. I talked with him several times, great guy. And he had a really excellent staff there. The staff was really, really good. Bunch of, just a Mexican, like men in general. I really enjoyed like their attitude, especially towards my kids. Because in the U.S., like most men, like don't give like kids like a smile. I've noticed they're not like, what a lot of them will do with like kids, like especially my kids who are like, you know, unvaccinated, so they're really healthy and they're like, you know, they're full of energy all the time and they're all charged up and they're, you know, getting into stuff and they're running around and they're just, you know, they're unstoppable. You know, they're 2.5 and 4, and so like men in the U.S. And there's a lot of them that just aren't fathers, best I can tell, but like they'll more like be kind of annoyed, you know, that there's a kid making noise or kid being a kid. But like the Mexican men, whether they were like, you know, in their young 20s or maybe, you know, late teens right up to old men, were like really, really friendly to my kids. Like they would smile at them, they would say hi to them. A lot of times I'd have cash on my shoulders walking around. You know, he's 2.5 years old and we're walking a lot down there. We just walked a lot, and Cash, he just can't keep up with us. He's so little, so it wears him out, you know.
Aww.
And so he'd walk on my shoulders a lot of the time. And then in Cyprus, she'll walk pretty good, and Shannon would carry her a bunch. But he'd be on my shoulders and like just walking, like random, like, you know, Mexican men would, you know, give Cash a fist bump, you know, give him a high five, and you know, they would say something in Spanish that, you know, sounded nice and polite. I don't even know what they were saying, with a smile. So the culture when it comes to families, definitely in, you know, with the people down there in Acapulco is very, very strong. And I felt that.
I'm always telling whenever there's like a bunch of conservatives on the internet saying like, we need to close the borders because of these Mexicans, I'm always saying like, they are more family valuing Christian than you guys.
So I worked with a fella down there. His name's Oscar. He was one of the employees for the Secret Garden. Well, anyways, back to the Secret Garden a little bit. So the Secret Garden is sort of like a holistic / spiritual like healing thing. So there's like a lot of like yogi mentality, a lot of like Ram Dass influence with, you know, some of the structure and the art. I don't know if you guys know who Ram Dass is.
He's like a Buddhist guy.
So, yeah, something. I I'm just paraphrasing my wife. She knows more. She really appreciated like a lot of what was down there, because, you know, she's sort of been in that, you know, realm, you know,
massage therapist.
So she's been a massage therapist her entire career, and she's very much into that like spiritual, you know, connection to Mother Gaia kind of things. I really think the problem now is the internet, and of course academia. So especially for like, you know, if you start looking at like the IQ levels of the culture of the city urban liberal type versus basically rural America, you know, and a lot of the white supremacists, you know, that are floating around Twitter and stuff, they want to say that, you know, like black people have a lower IQ than white people. I don't think that that is an accurate statement. I think that the people who have been fifth generation welfare recipients living in these cities have a lower IQ than the people who haven't been living in cities, because the cities are polluted. The air is damaged. When a welfare mom, you know, has a baby, you know, it isn't likely that she's eating organic food and taking care of herself. She's, you know, consuming fluoridated water, or she's
seed oils in the formula.
One of my friends is actually a big cheese in a regional a supermarket here in the Northeast. I'm not going to say the name. And she told me that they have all the data on the kind of foods that the people with using EBT cards are buying. So they know how old the people are. They know basically how many kids they're feeding, because they have like an app that like you can get points, and like if you, you know, and then you can, you know, put for each kid, you know, what kind of food they want. So what they're doing is, so a lot of these welfare moms, for example, and you just walk around.
That's the beginnings of the CBDC, right?
Right. Yeah, just walk around on the 5th of the month in Manchester. There's a market basket right downtown Manchester. Hmm. And you see the kind, so the woman that's buying food for her kids has, you know, a several hundred dollar hairdo. She has, you know, $1,000 iPhone. She has a couple hundred dollar nail, you know, whatever, when you get your nails done, right? She's got
nails did,
whatever. And so what she has to do is she has to buy the maximum amount of calories, you know, versus dollars. So what is her shopping cart full of? All kinds of sodas, because sodas are cheap. All kinds of, you know, like sugary, you know, cereals and junk food.
They probably say, "Oh, my kids only drink soda too." You know, I'm drinking soda now, but it's the Mexican kind. So
the multiple packs of zebra cakes. All this, everything that's made.
Hey, that was my favorite.
Everything that's made with all the government subsidized stuff, like the canola oil, the cotton seed oil, the you know, the high fructose corn syrup, even the sugar. And when it says sugar, it's from beets. And sugar beets are sprayed with a lot of Roundup and all kinds of other, you know, fungicides and chemicals and, you
know,
stuff.
Yeah, see, that's what I want to do next, is just, like, get really good quality, like, organic sugar. Because
it's
like,
called maple syrup.
I love maple syrup, but it doesn't work for everything I need sugar for.
But anyways, so, and Jordan Peterson talks about, and I put a lot of study into, you know, how not to screw up your kids. My Anarcho-Polco presentation was how not to F up your children.
I got a
standing ovation for it. It
nice.
Was, yeah, I couldn't believe how much positive response I got from it. Anyways, so when children are born, the day a baby's born, he pretty much has his maximum IQ right then and there. And it is very, very challenging to increase IQ in a child. But it is relatively easy to reduce the IQ of a child. And the way that you can easily reduce the IQ of a child is basically feed it a whole bunch of junk food. So the welfare moms are being told, oh, don't breastfeed. Here is this stuff that they call Similac or Enfamil, which is basically breast milk flavored Coca-Cola, if you start looking at the ingredients on it. And so that doesn't build a strong brain. So they're feeding the kids formula. They're feeding them all kinds of government subsidized junk food that they're buying, you know, in the cities, and, you know, versus, you know, the earthy, crunchy, you know, mom that, you know, has the means and has a good supportive husband and, you know, isn't on the welfare. Like, I could tell you, my wife, she's like only buying organic things for the most part. And all summer long, we're not even buying any produce because we grow it all. And you know, we haven't bought meat in like 3 or 4 years because we raise all our meat. And you know, I'm pretty, you know, anal about what I feed the livestock. I feed them basically stuff that I can confirm has no pesticides on it, no herbicides on it. Definitely, I've had some of my grains and stuff tested for glyphosate. What's happening is the people in the cities, they have been getting their IQs diminished right from the start, just because of the environmental poisons and the diet that a lot of these city urban liberal types are feeding. And not all city urban liberal types are actually on welfare. You know, some of them, well, and you know, but a lot of them are of the parasite class. There isn't too many non-parasite people that are, you know, working careers that are living in a city.
Well, you know,
there are
you know,
some.
It's also, but it's just the poorer ones, because the wealthier ones can go to like a Whole Foods or places like that.
We have Danny calling from, I think, Mexico. Danny, what's on your mind?
Oh, I guess, yeah, Jay reached out to me and said to call in. I'm calling from Chiapas and down here working on a project.
Yeah, you work on a lot of projects, don't you, Danny?
Yeah. It
like
keeps
building?
Me busy.
Yeah, Danny's been a contractor.
Yeah, building blockchains, all kinds of good stuff. I work alongside of a couple of free staters, actually, with guys who work with Hush that built the tools that help us build Dragon X and the new crypto Tumen, which is a physical Mexican currency that a bunch of anarchist Mexicans got together, fought the government off, and started their own currency. And it's a paper currency that's been going for almost as long as Bitcoin.
Wow.
And when I met them a couple of years ago, I said, well, why aren't you digital? And they said, we don't know how. So, you know, the guys at Hush helped me put something together for them, and they have a blockchain now. So I'm here teaching them how to use it and helping them to get a marketplace going.
Did you say it's Cumin? It's Cumin?
Tumen.
Tumen
is it
backed by anything?
It's a Nahuatl word.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it's backed by the community. It's it's an indigenous word that means money.
Hmm.
And basically, it's not backed by debt. It's backed by the goods and services of the community. So there's 6 different regions in Mexico that are using this right now, over 3,000 users. And basically, you have to accept 10% of your purchase in Tumen to become part of the Tumen community. So it's sort of like a reward point that just drives business. It's just building a circular economy.
That's pretty cool.
There's a lot on YouTube about it. It's a really interesting story. And when it started in a university, and then it started kind of bled out into this little town called Espinal in Veracruz. And when the Bank of Mexico heard about it, they decided to sue them, saying that it was counterfeit. So they did a little bit of legal studies and found out that there were protections under the Mexican Constitution that allowed for indigenous rules and economies, and they were able to beat them.
Nice.
And when that happened, the TV and radio got a hold of it, and you know, people around Mexico started hearing about it, so it became popular in more and more areas.
That's so cool. It's kind of like the Liberty Dollar, but without getting completely destroyed by the feds.
Right, yeah.
Well, this sounds like the bank tried. But see, in the United States, the bankers have this kneecap alignment agency called the FBI you know, protects their interests. And it sounds like the Bank of Mexico actually had to go do a lawsuit, like it was like, you know, some kind of like, you know, regular business would have to go try to do a lawsuit if somebody was trying to, you know, if they wanted to straighten somebody out. But it's good that the Bank of Mexico didn't prevail there.
That's really awesome. That's a really cool thing to hear about. And I'm glad that you got them set up with a blockchain on there.
Yeah, and it's a Zcash fork. So they're they weren't even looking for privacy, but they got it anyway. So
nice.
So Danny, the reason I wanted you to call in is because I wanted you to tell I'm trying to pimp out Anarchapulco here while I'm on the air at Free Talk Live. Because it was a great event. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I'd like to see it not cost, you know, Jeff Berwick $50,000 out of his pocket, first off. I want to encourage people to buy the replays. And I'd like them to use my affiliate code, which is JAY at anarchapulco.com tickets. And so, Danny, what was your, did you get to watch any presentations while you were there? Because I know you were pretty busy.
I watched yours, and I watched Curtis Stone's, which was really interesting.
Yep.
He's the regenerative farmer.
Hmm.
And there was a couple of others. I definitely avoided the flat earth as much as I could. And of course, Crypto Day. I was MC for Crypto Day, so I kind of had to watch all that, but that was good anyway.
What was your favorite?
Pretty interesting.
Favorite presentation at Anarchapulco?
The kid from Argentina who came down and had started Monero Town. So his
the basketball
his
playing
town,
one.
Soccer.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so he had a soccer team there. They're trying to get the girls' basketball team sponsored, by the way. But so they illegalized betting, wouldn't let them bet, or somehow they shut it down. So they heard about what was going on in El Salvador, and they decided that they would do that where they are. But Bitcoin was too expensive to use, so they reached out to the Monero community, and the Monero community helped them get that going, and now 70% of the town accepts Monero.
The machine that harvests the wheat is called a combine. So a combine takes and it strips the wheat off the chaff, and then it drops all the chaff on the ground, which is your straw, and then it takes all of the wheat kernels, the wheat berries, and it puts them into what they call a tank. And if the wheat is green, what will happen is it won't separate the wheat from the chaff. The wheat berries will go right out on the ground with the straw. And if you have any weeds in the field, so there's this weed called binder weed, which I've pulled out of the combine before because we did wheat harvest. My stepfather, actually, he did not spray any Roundup on his wheat because he had an exclusive contract for certified glyphosate-free wheat. And it was all going to animal feed. And they were paying $3 more a bushel for this wheat. So he just didn't spray on it. So what we had to do was actually walk in front of the combine and pull these weeds that would, because we didn't want the combine sucking them up. But this one particular weed was called binder weed. And we're literally got an oxygen acetylene torch and, cutting dikes, wire cutters, mm-hmm. to cut these binder weed out of the combine. It was really difficult. So we just started walking ahead of the combine and just, picking the weeds because he didn't do like a lot of he just did his corners of his fields in wheat. He didn't do tens of thousands of acres. He maybe did 300 acres in total, but so it's definitely a difference. And if you look at gluten under a microscope, and a guy who told me about this was a seed and chemical rep for Cargill Agriculture. So Cargill is basically a Monsanto company. And he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, I won't eat anything that has wheat because if you look at gluten under a microscope looks like a ball of rubber bands. And it is just a perfect place to hold on to glyphosate. And they spray it pretty heavy on the wheat, 2 weeks before they harvest it. So it's dry and crunchy. So they are able to get all of the wheat out of the combine. Out of the straw.
That's terrible. It's just really evil stuff. And a lot of people don't know that George Washington Carver, who you learn in school, oh, he just made peanut butter. Don't look any further. Well, he was all about, hey, guys, I see this trend towards nitrates and or whatever it is that they nitrites, whatever it's called, that they use for fertilizer. I'm seeing this trend towards fertilizer and pesticides. We need to stop this, and we need to go to, basically, he was describing regenerative farming, and nobody listened to him, and they kicked him out of his college he worked at in Alabama. But I really believe in all that stuff, but I want to know about why Danny moved to Mexico, because you're an American, right, Danny?
Yeah, I didn't move to Mexico. Oh. I'm nomadic, so I live half the year in the U.S. and half the year down here. I make my way back to Austin whenever there's a hailstorm because I'm a roofing contractor. And the rest of the time, I'm just traveling around trying to do stuff.
I was wondering do you feel more free in Mexico? It's kind of a topic we've been talking about here on the show.
Yeah, in some cases, not always. There's a presence, a military presence everywhere, although they don't mess with you, but, it's still troubling.
It's more for show, in my opinion.
Yeah, and crooked cops. I mean, I don't worry about being robbed by anybody that doesn't have a badge.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've heard, they'll pull you over.
That happened a few times. It's
I know. I prefer the paying the bribes to paying tickets.
The thing,
more upfront,
yeah,
same thing.
You don't have to go to court.
Yeah, you don't have to go to court. There's not, you know, points on a license. It's way better. I mean, it's annoying, and it's like it sucks that even that happens. Yeah. But it's just way better, and it's not even that expensive necessarily. And you can just argue with them too. And if you know what you're doing, and you know kind of what your rights are and what situations you're in, I've seen people argue with the cops in Mexico, and the cop just get fed up and walk away.
Even like white Americans.
Yes. I've seen people do it. So it's, if you know how things work, you can
I've had them, you tell them, I don't have any cash. I only have a credit card. If the bribe is big enough, they will follow you to the ATM. They've done that to me. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
That's awful.
But, you know, the reason like as far as Anarchapulco, I've been to all of them. I started coming in 2015, and over the last 5 years, I guess, I've been working with Anarchapulco, scheduling everything and getting the crypto going and working with the orphanage and just doing all the different outreach stuff that we actually do in the community around there. Colin and Jay helped me out quite a bit with that. We went out one day and did some stucco work on a guy's house. One of the taxi drivers for Anarchapulco, his house was damaged in the hurricane.
His house was straight up leveled.
I went down there for that. Yeah, his house was pretty jacked up. And
I've been meaning to ask.
Put some money together.
I've been meaning to ask you.
Put money together and rebuilt his house, and they're almost done with it now. So
was he in the house when it got blown away, or were they out?
No, they left. They went and hid in the car.
Okay. The whole family was in the car.
The whole family hid in their car to ride the hurricane out, and it leveled. It leveled his son's house that was right next to it, and then his house was just mangled. It was just made out of like coconut boards and stuff like that. And we put the money together. Basically, Rebecca from Anarchapulco and myself, we donated money, and then the Otis Fund from Anarchapulco, the Hurricane Otis Fund, matched what we donated, and that built the house up to where it was. So there was still about 25% left to go on the walls, and we raised money with the auction to finish that up and to get him his roofing materials.
On the line with us, we have Corbett. Corbett, where are you calling from tonight?
Somerville, South Carolina.
South Carolina. What's on your mind tonight, Corbett?
I met Jay down in at Anarchapulco, and the more I got to know him, the more I realized he has all the qualities that fit the community that I tend to gravitate to, and that's the bear community.
Yeah, I asked Corbett to call in because he told me about the bear community. He's like, "You ever hear of this bear community?" I'm like, "No, what is it?" And I was like, man, that's awesome.
Spelled like the animal bear?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'll let Corbett explain.
All right. So back in like 2017, I was listening to the Tom Woods show. Mm-hmm. It was around 2015 that I knew something was wrong in the world. Like, I literally would have to turn my back when I ate lunch. I worked for the Boeing company. I used to build airplanes. And I would go into lunchroom and CNN would be on the TV and I'd just turn my back because the Chiron would just irritate me. And I knew something was wrong in the world.
What's the Chiron? What's
and
that
so
mean?
I started, that's the little ticker underneath. That feeds you all kinds of like information while the talking heads are talking.
Yeah. Okay. I never knew that word.
Okay. They call it a Chiron, I believe.
Cool.
Anyways, so to make a long story short, I started understanding libertarianism. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. Jay Newton? No. Pete Quinones? You know whoever Pete Quinones?
Yeah, I know who Peter Quinones is. He now calls himself a post-libertarian, but he's probably a libertarian when you heard his interview.
Well, I was listening to him when he wasn't even using his name.
Oh.
He wasn't using his name because I think he still had a job and he was afraid of blowback. So anyways, to make a long story short, he turned me on to Tom Woods. I started listening to Tom Woods. Well, the comedian Owen Benjamin at the time was living in Saranac Lake, New York. And so Tom Woods interviewed Owen Benjamin. And I never heard of the guy. But his interview just rung so true. Like, I just loved the way the guy was speaking. I thought that he was genuine. And, and you know, he was standing up for a lot of things that I was against. And shortly thereafter, I wouldn't say he was an A-list comedian. He was a B-list comedian. But he was highly sought after in the business. He'd been there like 16 years. He stood up against the trans child agenda, and they blackballed him. They kicked him out of everything.
Hmm.
Like, took away all his ways of making a living. So he was kicked out of CAA, kicked out of Hollywood. He could no longer tour because any venue that he called, they would say, yeah, sure. He'd sell tickets, and in the last minute, they'd cancel on him. And so he finally figured out that the only places he could do comedy on the road in order to make a living for his family was libraries and people's personal property, private property. So I think around 2018, I started following the guy. And to make a long story short, he exuded a lot of the things that he now doesn't like victim consciousness. Hmm. He was extremely angry. He still was under the Muslim spell. He was very angry at the small hats. And I don't know what else, you know, what I can say on this channel, so I'll just be kind of cryptic. So, but I watched this guy, and I just knew that he was trying to find the truth. And he was highly intelligent and extremely funny.
Hmm.
And so over time, I watched him get better and better and better. And he grew a family of four young sons. And he moved from Saranac Lake to Washington near Gig Harbor. And then when COVID hit and he couldn't stand all the people wearing masks and he didn't want to fight any longer, he moved to North Idaho, and that's where he lives now.
Hmm.
And ever since then, he's been running a podcast, and it got kicked off of all kinds of platforms. It's been banned in all kinds of places. He was kicked off of Patreon, not for something he did on Patreon, but for something he did off of Patreon. And so it was a huge wake-up call to me, just how much control the powers that be have.
What's his podcast called?
What is it called? So his website where it's shown is called Unbearables. No, it's not. It's called Unauthorized TV.
Okay.
There's a gentleman, but you know who Vox Day is?
No, I don't know who that is. Another podcaster.
Vox Day, yeah, he's a podcaster and intellectual.
Okay.
He lives in, I think, Italy or Spain? I think he lives in Italy. He runs Castalia House and Arcaven Comics. And between Owen and Vox Day, they came up with the idea that, like, literally, if you don't own it, you don't control it.
And we have Dave Ridley calling from New Hampshire on the line. Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, this is probably not the most important race in New Hampshire, but it sort of provides a microcosm of what it's like when you run for local office in New Hampshire, or maybe anywhere. But you guys know Russell Canning. He's a friend of the show, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So he lives here in Winchester, and he's a free stater, and he's also an NH Exeter. He runs NHExit.org. He's running for school board, and so now he's, you know, he's always avoided politics because he's considered, you know, a Christian anarchist. So his eyes are just bugging as he's having to get involved in this stuff. He can't believe it. So what happened just over the last week or two is that so there was a Meet the Candidates event that was scheduled for a couple days ago. And so he's going to go. Then, like at the last minute, right before the Meet the Candidates event happens, there's some King decides it's not going to accept Winchester students anymore. King schools aren't going to accept Winchester students anymore. it's going to go into effect in about 3 years, right? It's really not, it's not pressing, but the entire town loses its mind, and they cancel the Meet the Candidates meeting so that they can have an emergency board meeting to discuss the change in policy that's going to happen in 3 years. The emergency meeting happened just 2 days before just the regular meeting, stuff they could have just talked about in the regular meeting, right? And it wipes out the candidate's event. So they reschedule the candidate's event for 2 days later, and then they cancel that. That gets canceled too, and they have a regular meeting today, I guess it was. And
what was the reason for the second cancellation?
Yeah, it's just like everyone's like just their chain is just the entire town's chain is being jerked, and nothing got done. It's just like they didn't even have any information at the emergency meeting. They had a little bit more information at the more recent meeting, but it's just why would anyone want to be involved in this? I can't believe he's doing this.
Well, Jay also ran for an office, and it's one of those things that, like, libertarians don't want to have to do, but sometimes you just feel like it's better you to be doing it than some terrible Democrat in Jay's case or whoever's going to run in Russell Canning's case.
It isn't that libertarians don't want to do it. It's that people that have meaningful stuff to do don't want to run for office.
And Russell's also, like, a busy working person.
Yeah, he's got things to do. So what you have is a bunch of career parasites, you know, filling up all these Democrat positions everywhere.
Wait,
mentally
are you telling
ill.
Me we don't have any, like, you know, bored libertarians in this state.
No, they're all very occupied.
All of them?
Do you know some bored libertarians that got nothing better to do but play video games and do drugs?
That'll be my activism for this week. I'll look up all the ones that I know are basically boring and doing nothing, and then I'll chastise them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Call them out. Put them to work.
That's what we have Slacktivism for, basically. It's a signal group that I think our caller Alu started, and it's all about the people who don't really want to put in that much work, but the least they can do is
that's a good way I could shape people. I could actually create a couple groups and called it Slackers, and then just add all those people into the group, and then they'll know who they are, you know, just because I've added them into that group.
Just in case you didn't know, you are a slacker. That's why you were added to this group.
And yeah, that'll be in the title.
You get a daily chastising from Colin.
Because every now and then you meet a guy who, like, creeps out to girls, for example, and, like, he doesn't know he creeps out to girls until you explain to him he creeps out to girls. And sometimes they get really upset. But I've definitely have talked to a couple of guys that creep out the girls, for example, and they're like, oh, I do that? I don't want to do that.
Yeah, thanks
like
for
they had
me.
No idea that, you know, it's like, hey, if I got a booger in my mustache, you know, please tell me. But, you know, dude, you're creeping the girls out. And he's like, give me some examples of what I can do what I'm doing to creep out the girls. So me and a couple other guys started telling this guy, you know, for example, a few things he was doing, and he stopped doing those things, and he doesn't creep out the girls anymore. So
nice. So funny. So is that all you had for us today, Dave Ridley?
Well, I have something that I've been trying. I have this, like, long-term philosophy. Like, I'm going to be doing enough state activism and federal activism. I don't really have to do activism in my town, right? Like, there's no need to anger someone who lives two blocks from me when those might be the people I'm relying on when the lights go out. So I just have a policy of not doing a local activism, basically.
You're pissing them all off in Keene, so they...
Yeah, when I lived in Woodstock, I didn't do any ambush interviews in Woodstock. When I lived in Bedford, I rarely did ambush interviews in Bedford. I just would go somewhere else. Don't fight where you live. You know?
Want them to come pitchfork.
This is actually a good strategy. Again, we should all organize, and what we'll do is, like, each one of us will tell the one in the next town over what to do in the next town over.
Yeah, who to target.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm not sure this is a good idea for everyone to do. It's just something I've been doing. And so, you know, going to Russell's meetings
and ambush interviews.
If I were to go to Russell's meetings and ambush a bunch of interviews, that would kind of violate my policy. So what I did instead was I've just been wearing a Russell Canning sign around my neck. And it's like a sort of a sandwich board. And then a pickup litter. So I'll pick up. Went to pick up litter at this event tonight. Instead of ambush interviewing people, I just picked up litter all around the site, wore a Russell Canning sign, and then went home.
Nice. That's pretty good activism.
That's a good idea. You know what? I could do that, and I could add a little to that because I've been trained. My kids. That was actually one thing I had to, like, stop my kids from doing in Mexico was picking up trash. I'm like, guys, there's so much trash, we can't pick it all up. But, like, at Pork Fest, up by the kid area, they had no trash cans for, like, the first several days last year. So I would just carry a couple of, like, cellophane bags with me, and I'd give a cellophane bag to each kid, and let them pick them up, pick up trash, because every time we walk around my property, if there's any trash, I make it a point to pick it up. And same thing when we go anywhere, we just kind of
so that's where all the trash has been going that I keep dumping.
Yeah, all your seltzer cans. Yeah, we keep on picking them up. So, anyways,
I wasn't done with that. I just wanted it to go get flat before I drank it. You know,
if I wore a political sign and walked around my kids picking up trash out of the vent and had my kids like wearing these little, you know, make shirts or signs, that'd be pretty, you know, pretty good little attention getter. Because anytime I go around somewhere picking up trash from my kids, people can't believe that my kids actually do it. And I'm like, they just do what I do.
I agree with all that stuff you guys are saying, and I think that this way I always go back to, if I make a city, I'm going to keep welfare out of it, and that will just, there won't be homeless people. There won't be homeless people sitting on the side of the road asking you to wash your windows and stuff whenever you come to an intersection and things like that, because they're not, they
won't
be getting
welfare. You know what, I have to push back on that. So this is an interesting thing I saw in Mexico, because I travel around. Like Jay's now been down there, and he's been to at least one town. He's seen how things are in one area. But I travel around, and I go to other cities and different places. So I was last year in Morelia, and I stayed there for a month. Really like Morelia. Could go talking about that for quite some time. But while I was there, as you pull up to the intersections, you will see people doing things like cleaning the windshields or whatever. But they're doing something to earn it. So this was an interesting thing.
Okay, well, these people in America don't do that. They come a dirty thing, and they...
I have never seen a homeless guy that in Manchester come up and try to clean your windows, because they're all getting welfare, and they're just doing smack.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing, though. You know that all those like migrant caravans and stuff like that, and how there's all these populations of people moving around? So there's now groups of people... they're passing through or staying, whatever, but they're not Mexicans. They're actually like from the Caribbean. And like sometimes they're even like French speaking or something like that. It was really interesting because you would see them and they would start going up to those same corners, but they would just have a sign saying, give me money. And so it's like the Mexicans didn't like that. And, you know, they're like, we don't like these people. They're not doing anything. Meanwhile, you would actually see people, you'd see like a young kid and like maybe his older brother, and they would like, you know, do things where they light sticks on fire and toss them and put on a show as you're waiting. Yeah, really. And so, you know, if you travel around, you'll see things like that in Mexico. It's like, man, this guy's just earned it. He just did this whole show and everything, you know? And it's like, your life is a little better, you know?
Okay, but you're not pushing back on what I said, though, because, okay, forget the washing windows thing. That really doesn't even really happen that much anymore. It's more just like people standing on the side of the road asking for quarters or whatever. But I don't think there will be homeless people in my Bonnie Dream City whenever I make commandeer an area in New Hampshire and turn it into a city where I'm not going to allow there to be any government acceptable, you know.
Now, here's a better question. Not how are you going to keep the homeless people out. How are you going
to
keep...
I don't have to keep them out. They just won't want to come because there won't be welfare.
How are you going to keep out the people who are going to want to promote that kind of lifestyle? Like, give those people stuff to make them come there.
Maybe you have a constitution where the constitution says that you can't, that these particular rights are secure to life, liberty, and property, so you can't tax people to make them pay for the welfare situation.
Yeah.
Then you got to be able to force the constitution, so you got to give it teeth. How do we arm the constitution?
Everybody who wants to be there will have to have their own business and property to take care of and have something to do. I don't know how I'm going to enforce it. I haven't thought about it that far ahead, but without welfare, there aren't going to be people.
One time a cop was taking my constitutional rights, and this piece of paper flew in from the air and like tackled him and made him stop.
Sarah, what's on your mind, Sarah?
Yes, I just want to bring up that all this computer technology is just so frustrating, because I'm 54 and it seems like, Richard, did we learn how to take an Uber ride? Did somebody set it up for us?
Wow.
We did it 2 times and then we forgot already. Now we can't figure out how to get an Uber ride again.
You got to practice. So you got to practice your Uber pickup.
Maybe there's someone to call. Maybe you can call like a phone number on there and see if they can help you.
So you have like a smartphone, right?
He does. Richard has a smartphone, and somebody set up the Uber account, and then they program where we had a car pick us up, and then now we can't do it ourselves because we forgot to do it, and everything like this is just so frustrating. like somebody was going to refinance a mortgage and they wanted to send us documents that we could sign on the computer, we could never figure that out. I mean, we got all caught up.
As funny as it is, I'm going to suggest a solution that's computer/phone-based. If you have the YouTube app, just go there, and for anything you're ever looking to do, like how to do this, how to do that, whatever it is, how to cook a certain kind of food, how to fix a car, how to run different programs, and you'll usually be able to find a result. And maybe you have to look at two different or three different results to get the one you want, but it people put together videos and they put them on there, and it's great. It's one of the coolest things that's happened for looking for information.
YouTube search, how to use the Uber app. And that'll really help you out a lot.
Yeah, but Sarah, doesn't that mean that there will be one more car on the road?
It's just, we do it because there's no buses that go there. I mean, where we were thinking of going, it's so far out, we were going to catch the bus way one back. And when we got like pork chops or, you know, perishable food, we have to take the Uber coming back.
So, are you putting homeless people's lives in danger every time you call an Uber?
I mean, you know, the thing is, it's inevitable. I mean, I try to do as much like harm reduction, but there's no way of getting around it. So,
Sit in the front seat and you watch for homeless people while the driver is not really paying attention or speeding, and you call out homeless person if one's in the road? Is that the harm reduction?
Well, you know, I just sit in the back like a taxi cab driver. Well, what we have to do is called Z-Trip, because they're the only one that takes phone calls. We don't have to do it on the computer. And then my thing is that it's so frustrating. We can't. We're senior citizens, and I was at the library, and there's actually a course. Where it's got a smartphone on the picture. There's actually a course on Wednesdays and Fridays that actually help you use the computer.
Nice. So you should go to that, Sarah, definitely, because I think that that would be really helpful. Sarah used to call in to ask us things that were very much something somebody should just Google. So it'd be great if Sarah goes to those classes and learns how to use smartphones more and computers more.
So you guys who've been listening to me, been hearing me talk about New Hampshire DCYF, also known as Child Protective Services. And so here in New Hampshire, because we have an actual citizen legislature that isn't much influenced by DCYF, the performance of DCYF, because we have a legislature that doesn't have a pension fund. And, you know, the judge's pension fund in New Hampshire gets a lot of money based on the performance of DCYF. So this is one reason DCYF is so protected by government, because the pension funds get money based on from the Social Security Administration based on the performance of DCYF. Anyways, this past Monday, there was a House committee on investigating DCYF. And in fact, if we can put in the show notes somewhere a link to the video. Also, there is a GraniteGork.com. Granite Grok. Yes, Grok. Yeah, thank you for that. Is a local... news source, and they have an article in there about this. But so this committee to investigate DCYF, which was headed up by Leah Cushman, because Leah Cushman got many, many, many complaints as a state representative about the horrible things that DCYF and family court are doing to people. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it without due process of law. So the last committee that hearing is a 3-hour hearing on YouTube, and it was and the subject was DCYF and due process of law. So there was some people, Andrew Noyes was one of the guys who explained like what actual due process of law is very, very well. But I'll back up a little bit. In this committee at the very beginning, Leah Cushman says, yeah, we're gonna ask people to take an oath. And she says in that committee that And there was an objection from, I believe the woman's name is Baker, Representative Baker. I can't remember her first name. Anyways, and there was another Democrat on that committee who I believe objected to, or objected also. So they objected to this testimony being under oath. And so now the Democrats are in a frenzy about this. They have actually, in a union leader, there's an op-ed sort of trying to bash Leah Cushman over this, you know, oath. And the oath is actually not required. If you go and you watch this video that's on YouTube, the House Committee YouTube channel, and maybe Colin, you could find that video.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for it right now.
Yeah. It's in the.
What did you say the first name you thought the lady was?
Baker. But if you go into Noon versus State Group that we have, you'll find the video in there, and we'll give you a better description on the link to
the
actually
granite
look
Grok
up.
Says who it is too.
Yes, and it has it in the granite Grok. But I want to make this easy for listeners to go check this out. So they object, and the reason that they're saying that they object to the oath, and is totally within, you know, the statutory realm for the legislative officers, you know, for the representatives on the committee to ask someone to be put under oath. So this is not a committee about someone's opinion on a bill. This is actual testimony from people who have been trespassed on by DCYF and the family court. In fact, people should really listen to this hearing because, you know, it is the stories are like, you know, unbelievable that some of the people are talking about. And it just, if you, anywhere you are, just do your, you know, New Hampshire DCYF settlements, and you'll just see that just the amount of money the state has paid out, the liability that DCYF has created amongst the taxpayers is the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. It might be something like $300 million in the past decade that's been paid out by the Division of Risk and Benefit of New Hampshire. So we'll see if the public records request gets answered on that particular subject. But anyways, so the Democrat on the committee says, well, if people aren't going to want to, you know, be forthcoming if they're under oath. So Leah says, well, if they don't want to be under oath, then they don't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not requiring you to be under oath. She's just administering oaths. And she said that you don't have to accept the oath and you can still testify. I believe the reason the Democrats are freaking out about this is because it is actual testimony from actual victims. DCYF is quite literally a cash cow for the parasite class, for the people who work in government. If you look at this Social Security Administration Title IV, and you start looking into how much money through the Title IV program has been given to the states, it is like a half a billion dollars has been given, like, you know, to the 50 states from the Social Security Administration, and that money is incentive money to incentivize DCYF to basically take children to do assessments. And the other thing too that was about this hearing is there was a few people who testified that we called DCYF because this child was being neglected and abused, and nothing happened. Multiple people called DCYF. This child is being neglected and abused. Nothing happened. But at the same time, they're investigating families that, let's just say, for lack of a better description, families that are anti-narrative. So, like, for example, I just talked to a woman the other day on the phone. She's going to testify at the next committee where her 5-year-old son was taken from her for allowing the son to ride the bicycle up and down her driveway. And her driveway is basically a class 6 road. What is a class 6 road in New Hampshire? A class 6 road is a road that is not maintained by the town or the city or the state because it was basically a carriage path 100 years ago, and it's never, you know, they're not paved, they're not plowed, you know, by the city. It's basically their driveway.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my driveway was a class 6 road up until a few years ago. It's no longer a class 6 road, but so this woman's kid was eventually taken from her just over allowing a 5-year-old to ride his bicycle up and down her driveway. And this particular woman has some mentally ill libtard neighbors that reported her. So basically what we have going on with the weaponization of the government, you know, we had a caller, you know, call in the beginning of the show about Trump. So we have a weaponization of this, you know, government, you know, left versus right, essentially happening at federal, state, county, and local levels all over the country. And DCYF is a really powerful weapon of this radical left that they're using against conservative families. Because, you know, and if you look at the nature of the people that actually go to work in DCYF as social workers, you look at the culture of them people, the liberal left institutions that they have, you have to attend to get the credentials to become a social worker. And these are institutions that are funded by the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, the Ford Foundation, MacArthur. You know, just walk around any of these, institutions, and you're going to find these plaques and stuff on the walls. Not all of them are funded by, you know, the associations or whatever, the endowments that I mentioned. But we know that Jeffrey Epstein's friends are quite literally, you know, funding the education of the social workers. Another interesting thing is social workers in New Hampshire take a class called "To Maximize Revenue for DCYF" via Social Security Administration Title 4, A, B, C, D, whatever.
That's crazy.
So,
like, shouldn't the purpose be, shouldn't you know that your job, your purpose is to protect kids if you're becoming a DCYF worker?
Not when there's money involved.
They straight up know that it's not that, and so, that it is to maximize profits.
And actually, a lot of the testimony that they talked about, like this one state representative and this other woman who testified at the very end of this committee, she was representing someone else who was actually trying to adopt her granddaughter because her daughter was a drug addict and was like, "Hey, mom, I got pregnant. I can't like do this baby. Will you take the baby?" So there was like an agreement between the mom, who's struggling with life, to get the baby from the drug addict daughter, and everything was good. And the mom was like from out of state, Wisconsin or Michigan or something. And this lady actually who read this testimony was a former state representative. And DCYF was like, "No, you can't do that," because they didn't want to lose custody of the child because that child is a cash cow for this money coming from the federal government to keep the system funded. So they want their maximum foster kids. They want them in foster care because this is how they make their living. And this is how the social workers are essentially trained, you know, via this class, which actually I'd love for somebody to contact me that has actually taken this class. You can contact me at jay@jaynoone.com. That's jay@jaynoone.com. That's my email. If you have any information about, you know, this maximizing revenue for DCYF class that's been offered at Granite State University.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.